Welcome to Entrepreneurship by Design, the Dr. C podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline, or simply Dr. C. Tune in every 2 to 5 weeks, every Monday, as we explore the unique journeys of entrepreneurs. Our podcast sheds light on the paths entrepreneurs have taken in their respective industries. Each episode, we dive into the stories of entrepreneurs, their challenges, triumphs, and the insights gained along their journey. We believe in the power of innovation, resilience, and the entrepreneurial spirit that drives success. Together, we'll learn from a diverse array of entrepreneurs united by their passion for making a difference. Now is the time to unlock the secrets of entrepreneurship. Now is the time to be inspired, to learn, and to craft your own path to success. Join me, Dr. C, as we embark on this journey together. Ready to dive into the world of cutting-edge product development? Meet Kevin Macko, the visionary force behind Macko Design Plus Invent and the driving force behind over 1,000 groundbreaking consumer hardware products. From revolutionizing startups to empowering inventors and small manufacturers, Kevin's expertise has earned global recognition with numerous awards from prestigious organizations like Red Dot, Indigo, Creative Pool, and Muse. But that's just the beginning. As the host of the Product Startup podcast, Kevin shares invaluable insights into the ever-evolving landscape of hardware development and making it a must-listen for industry professionals worldwide. Join us as we uncover the secrets to Kevin's success, explore the challenges and the triumphs of product innovation, and gain exclusive access to the mind of a true industry pioneer. Don't miss out. Hit like, subscribe, and comment below to support the channel and stay tuned for this game-changing episode. And thank you so much, Kevin, for being here today. It is such a pleasure to have you. And I am just so curious, what inspired you to specialize in product development for hardware startups? And how did Macko Design and Invent come to being in this result that it is today?
Well, that's a big question. Thanks, Dr. Caroline. I appreciate it. And I also appreciate you having me on your show. I know you're around that 250 interview mark. So that's impressive. So kudos to you and the show. Lots of great entrepreneurs on the show giving their words of wisdom. So I'm honored to be your most recent guest on the show and looking forward to sharing my journey, but also best practices for anyone in the audience who has an invention idea or a product idea, what you could be doing to turn that into a successful venture for yourself. My business story, it started a long time ago. It started when I was in high school and I had an invention idea, a physical product and a gadget. So first thing I did was started poking around, trying to figure out, well, who could help me make this thing? That was it. It was one of these businesses that were started out of personal necessity, as I'm sure so many entrepreneurs did that. You know, the difference is I took that leap of faith. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to figure out how to make this thing, this invention. And it's just butting my head against walls. It was impossible. There was no resources, nor companies, nor processes, nor education to help a startup, a home inventor, a individual with a physical consumer product idea go from that idea in their head through to design, engineering, prototyping, and of course, most importantly, onto manufacturing and selling product. So when I realized this like massive gap in a very small market, I said, I want to be the guy in that gap. I loved entrepreneurship. I was going to business school at the time. I'm a big fan of design and everything related to products and so on. So I said, look, I'm going to be that person that starts this idea. And it was just a crazy idea in high school, which started, I started poking around with, playing around with it while I went off to school and university. And I actually ended up incorporating halfway through university. I said, this is serious. I've got to take this more seriously, incorporated it. And then I actually then did a study at Hong Kong University because I was doing the design work locally and I wanted to bridge the gap to manufacturing. I said, okay, I'm going to go study and do a semester at Hong Kong University for manufacturing and supply chain management. The bigger purpose of that, of course, education was a big one, but on top of that was I want to meet some people that could actually produce these things. And that's where I started to create this model of what is called today design for manufacturing, DFM. It's taking an idea from that sketch on a napkin through to actual manufactured units. And that was the birth of the business that I jumped into eventually. So I was $50,000 in student debt. And I was class president at the Ivy Business School, which was Canada's top business school, Harvard Business School sister school. So I had pick of the litter of jobs, investment banking, management consulting, signing bonuses, the whole bit. And I turned that down very reluctantly to take a shot at this small business idea that I had been brewing and gathering small initial clients and so on, and doing small products and so on in school. Said, I'm going to go at this full time, 2 feet in, no turning back. And that was it.
I love it. And that's how it starts, right? Sometimes we just jump in, but I think there was a lot of foundation laid out. Like, you were sitting on it, you had the idea. And I'm really curious, because a lot of people listening might want to create something and they just don't know how or what that looks like, that process. I'm so curious, because you kind of mentioned a little bit, but going from the idea to production, what does that look like? I'm sure it looks different for every single thing, but as a generalization.
Great question. And there's some common threads to it. First and foremost, I'll say, you know, I've been doing this now for, you know, if we go back, starting to count up over 20 years, and I've seen a lot of hardware startups. I've worked with thousands of them. We've had over 1500 startups just as clients of ours, let alone others that I've worked with in and above that. And there are some common threads, whether you're making a houseware product like our Moonlighter product, or an underwater fishing camera like our GoFish client products, or any number of complexities in between, something really, really simple to something very complex. The idea of how you succeed in hardware is confusing. So the first things first is, what is my goal? And most hardware startups just aren't sure. Like, I've got this idea, but how do I actually turn idea into money?
Yes.
So big picture thinking, the very first thing that you just need to wrap your mind around is, there's no shortcut in hardware. There's no get rich quick scheme in hardware. There is one way, and only one way, that 99.9% of hardware startups that are successful do their businesses. And that is to manufacture their product. You have to get your product, whatever it takes, from idea through to producing units, selling them to real customers, and growing the business from there. Now, once you're at that point, of course, all these doors open up to great things like licensing, brand partnerships, acquisition deals, et cetera. But first and foremost, you need to get your product produced and into customers' hands. And once you understand that, then you can work backwards all the way from there to today, the idea, and figure out, well, how do you fill in the gap? Of course, this is what Macro Design does. We do design engineering prototyping for the product. But we deal with a very specific vertical of mass manufactured physical consumer products. But if you're in any consumer product category, the lesson is the same.
Yeah.
How do you get to production? And when you get to production, start selling units to real customers.
Yeah, no, I mean, it seems so simple, but it is that process. And I agree, like, just even thinking about it, the products we use on a daily basis and just how that transformed from just an idea to production and manufacturing is the biggest part. Do you see any pitfalls that happen once somebody starts manufacturing? Are there any obstacles that happen from the manufacturing piece to then selling it to the consumer?
Well, let's step back just one phase to go from that ideation to production. For the vast majority of hardware startups, that is 90% of the battle. And that is typically where your biggest hurdle comes into play. Cutting corners, skipping steps, doing things at a low quality, doing things that otherwise don't lead to a world-class, excellent version of your vision in production, and producing at a reasonable cost, in a high quality, and in a repeatable fashion. That's the first and probably by far the largest hurdle for most hardware startups. Now, let's assume that you've gone through those processes. And for a very quick synopsis, you've got vision and industrial design. You go into detailed engineering and rough prototyping, into mechanical prototyping for form, fit, and function, pre-production prototyping, which is how do you actually manufacture, and testing for certifications and whatnot, short-run production, and then full-scale production. So that's the quick Coles notes of your product development process for your average mass-manufactured physical consumer product. Your next question was, okay, well, now you've got that product, how do you sell? And the first thing I would say is, you want to look at a hardware product as an iterative process, but unlike software and agile development, you want to never, never go to market with a subpar product in terms of quality. you can have less features. And in fact, that's highly, highly recommended. So in fact, spend less money with your product design firm, like Macro Design. Spend less money, but of the fewer features that you're doing, make sure you are executing on those at a world-class engineering standard. So you're not trying to be everything to everybody with your first product. And that's one of the major hangups of hardware startups, especially. They think of all these features and bells and whistles that the product should have, and they lose sight of the core and typically one, maybe two key innovations that their product actually had. Focus, 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 and then do an extremely good job at that. Now, how do you take that to the next level? Let's say you've been really good at that. You've done all your design engineering, really focused MVP version of your product, world-class design, world-class engineering, excellent manufacturing. You actually now have some checks and balances. First and foremost, crowdfunding, spectacular tool. We all know of Kickstarter and Indiegogo. It's a great tool to gauge the market interest and actually get some money in your pocket to then use that money towards finalizing your design and engineering and your manufacturing, most of it towards manufacturing. You should have really completed your design and engineering, let's call it 80, 90% of the way there before crowdfunding, and using just the balance of the funds to finish that off and go into production, ideally just production itself. Now, you're going to listen to those customers. So you're going to deliver your first units. Let's say it's a small run, 500 units. That's okay. You get them to your customer, let your customer give you some feedback on those units. Now you're going to use that feedback before you go into what we call full-scale manufacturing. That might be 500 to 5,000 units. You're doing that both based on customer feedback and also based on manufacturing and engineering feedback from your design manufacturing team. At that point, you really de-risk both the feature, product market fit, and the actual quality of production so that now you can absolutely nail it when you go into full-scale production. And in fact, there's still one more level as you go to cost-down manufacturing to really improve your profitability, margins, and so on. So essentially, if you look at this process, you have your design and engineering, go to manufacturing, and then scale your manufacturing, always listening to customer feedback and adjusting the goalpost to ensure that your product is as successful as possible. Customer is key. Listening to the customer is key. Getting real units into those customers' hands is how you're going to get that absolutely golden feedback to show you precisely how to make a highly scalable and incredibly profitable hardware company.
Oh, spot on. I'm just like, yes, this makes so much sense and so applicable to anybody's business listening, because it's doing the market research or getting feedback from customers so you know what it is. And going back to even, because a lot of times we are so creative and want to do so much, but sometimes the simpler it is, the easier it is to navigate. And that's what I was hearing from you as well, is just if they have one or two major features, you could always like do upgrades later on or evolve. And that's just like where my mind was going when you were saying that. I was like, oh, that's so interesting, because I think we all do that in different ways and different capacities because we're so excited about something, but it's being realistic and simplifying it so you can get the product to the end consumer.
Absolutely. And I'll actually double down on that with a really interesting nugget there. You know, so much of what we see and hear and so much of what is taught in schools about business is coming from big business. And I went to business school, so I got to see this. I even went through the entrepreneurship stream at business school, but still the vast majority of logic and education comes around to how does a big corporation succeed? And that's great. If you're a huge multinational company with massive bank accounts and resources on top of that, years of partnerships and a variety of resources from a variety of stakeholders. As a hardware startup, though, you want to listen to some of those elements of success, but also understand that there's a large difference to how a startup succeeds. So when we talk about this concept of minimum viable product, releasing something to market that has less features, but super high quality, it's incredibly important to represent your brand. It's okay if you have customers saying, oh, I wish it had this or I wish it had that, but it's absolutely not okay to have a customer say, oh, the thing broke or it doesn't work. And this isn't just about hardware. This is any business, whether it's a service, software, or a hardware product. This is completely applicable. Your job as a startup is to take the core innovation, the thing that you recognize, that gap in the market, to focus on that gap very tightly and narrowly, even more focused than your original total addressable market. Enter the market in there, do an excellent job at that very tight market niche that you went after, and then expand and grow into the market from there using not just what you've learned, but of course, as we keep talking about, what the customers are telling you. And that's how you can come in on a startup-friendly budget, wedge into a market, and then expand like crazy as you are learning and evolving the product line from there.
So true. It's like I want to create a project now. but I'm curious because there's a lot that's evolved in the last few years or even just decades. But what do you see the current state of hardware startup industry looking like as of right now in 2024?
That's a great question. There is a it's really a brilliant time to be part of it because, first of all, it's easier than ever to get a hardware product from idea through to manufacturing. Even from us as a design firm, like even firms like us that didn't even exist, if you look 20 or 30 years ago, that now exist, and these platforms like Kickstarter and Indiegogo and so on, let alone countless companies that are helping accelerate and scale hardware startups, let alone the fact that big corporations are actually very interested in what startups are doing. You're noticing that they are developing less R&D themselves, but investing more aggressively into the next hot thing. Let the market and let the, inventors and startups figure out the next hot product, and they'll just buy them out for a great price for both parties. So it's a really interesting time because the tools that are available for us, CAD software, 3D printing, additive manufacturing, short run manufacturing, all of these tools which are making hardware much more accessible for a startup to go from idea through to production, but then also policies and practices and resources to also help you accelerate both educate and accelerate that process through. And because big corporate likes this, it's kind of funneling down. It's like trickle down economics from big corporate. Because they're so interested in all of this evolution happening, they are investing in all these incubators and maker spaces and entrepreneurship groups. And you look at, since I started, there's 100 times more accelerators for entrepreneurship of all categories, not just hardware, of all categories than there were, 25-ish years ago. So the resources are available. The processes are now available, the service providers are available, and all of that's feeding into an ecosystem that at the end of the day, the most important person, the customer, is available. You can get to them through Amazon, through Walmart Marketplace, direct to consumer through Shopify, through crowdfunding to kickstart these whole things, let alone all the traditional wholesale distribution, direct to retail opportunities that are still available that always were available, but now are amplified because customers love stories. Big corporate can't do that. You, as a hardware startup, can do that. You are the story behind your brand. And I don't care how much or how little you like public speaking, be the person behind your brand. No matter what type of person you are, you will find an audience that resonates with you, that believes in you, that likes what you're doing, that likes how you're doing it. And at the end of the day, loves the innovation that you're providing to help these people out. So you absolutely are the best person to be behind your brand. And that is something that you can do to get your product launched that big corporate can't, that customers absolutely love right now. That's why people love Kickstarter movement. That's why people love the entrepreneurial movement, because they're believing not just in the product itself, but in the story behind the product that's being sold to them.
Oh, yes, this is gold because I do believe storytelling and building your brand because people want to get to know who's behind it. They want to know the story. They want to know how it developed or the idea, but also who invented it, who is
Yes.
behind that, because it just makes that human connection element that it has been missing a little bit over the years, I think, with more technology, but being able to really see a person, even if it's virtual, but like being able to connect on that story, bits and parts of that, how they can relate in the interrelatedness of it and just human psychology. And I'm just really curious because you've helped so many different companies or startups, I should say, with over thousands now, or 1,000 consumer hardware products developed under your leadership. What would you say are the key principles or methodologies that you have found to be most effective in guiding successful product development processes?
That's a great question. There's a lot of different ways we could go with that. I'm going to talk about a couple that I think are extremely important. One of them I alluded to earlier, which is don't cut corners. Do it right. Do it right from the first place. And again, that doesn't mean feature creep, but that means whatever you're developing, whether it's hardware, software, or service-based company, learn what you need to learn so that you can present a very compelling, a very powerful pitch to your prospective buyer. figure out what that is. Figure out what that is behind your product and focus on quality above all else. Right now, because of online reviews, it can make or break a brand, and it swings hard in both directions. So if you're looking at a business saying, I'm going to kind of hack it through and hack it to market and hack my energy towards this thing and everything else, then that will get noticed and that will very quickly get discovered online and your digital footprint is permanent. On the flip side, if you're a person who is trying their best and you're a person who's really trying to put their best foot forward in terms of the product, service, software that they're offering, and if you're a person that's really dedicated to the cause or to the initiative that you're trying to do, that resonates with your audience and you will generate raving fans who will astronomically propel your product forward as well. So it's a real swing right now on both sides. And the middle ground is where you don't want to be. You really only want to be at the one end. Middle ground or low ground, both are not options today. You want to be on the high ground and doing things to best practice. So that's one. And that pairs with the second one, which is consistency. Now, I know a lot of people listening that are interested in getting into entrepreneurship likely have a day job right now, as do most of our clients at Macro Design. You have something that you're doing for your career, and it is necessary to pay the bills and to maintain your family life and whatever it is that you need to do. So you hear all these people online talking about, you know, you've got to go crazy and invest 100-hour weeks and whatever else. That is unrealistic at the early days of a hardware startup when there's no money coming in. In fact, you're probably spending money right now. So there's no money coming in. You're spending money or you're spending time to, again, focus on quality and really offer something great to the world. So because you can't work a crazy amount of hours, what you can do is be consistent. And we find this with our hardware product clients, those who just spend a few hours every single week, but never really lay off the throttle. You know, some weeks they may spend 10 hours, other weeks it may only be 2 hours, but the reality is they are constantly trying to progress the motion of this idea forward in every different element of the business. So it could be marketing and sales, it could be fundraising, it could be education, it could be the design of the product itself. There's a lot of different variables that could go into what you're working on, but the point is you need to be consistent and robust in terms of your effort to do that. And if you focus on that consistently, results will start to compound exponentially, especially if you're also focusing on quality. These two things go hand in hand. So I'm actually not one of those entrepreneurs that recommend you quit your day job and, you know, put your entire 401k all in into one thing and let it rip. I think you can very much vet out and validate an idea by consistently and reliably putting effort into it till there's a time in your life where you say, you know what, I've got enough momentum behind this thing where I am going to quit now. But this is an educated decision based on the reality of the achievements I've conquered so far in the business. Or, you know what, I've been batting down this road for a while. It really doesn't look like it's going to materialize. Maybe I reskin the idea. Maybe I rethink how this thing's actually going to go together, or maybe I just scrap it all together and my next one's going to come along. Now, I typically don't like scrapping an idea altogether because there's usually significant merit. It may have just slightly missed the mark in some way or another. So I think an adjustment is usually a first effort before ditching something. But know that I believe genuinely that you could do a lot of this, build a tremendous amount of momentum as a side hustle before you make the big commitment to go all in.
Well, you said so much there. I'm like unpacking it all. I think the quality and the consistency are both so important in anything we do. But I really love and I want to hone in on it's okay to be working your 9 to 5 and on the side be doing the hardware, creating it, the idea. And I think a lot of times it is just a little tweak instead of scrapping the whole thing. It's being able to tweak something that would make everything better. But we don't know that if we're not putting in that consistency or taking some time away from it, like not spending 20 hours a day, like on the weekend or something, trying to figure things out. But those little pockets of time is where things start to really compound. Like you mentioned, I've seen it in my own business. I've seen it in other aspects, but when we are doing it, taking the small steps versus like trying to take these leaps and bounds, which is great if you can, but I do think it's the calculated risks when we are and the educated decisions, looking at the whole picture of what's going on versus just like, I want to dive into entrepreneurship. That's great. And if you can do it, wonderful. But if you can't, it's okay too. There's no right or wrong way. Yes, there's best practices, of course, but looking at it from a different perspective and just changing the, or reframing what makes sense for you. And that's okay if it's not exactly how you think it's going to go. But if you're giving yourself that time and space in order to do it, that's where things can start to shift. And I think a lot of people just have a challenge with that because they want to see the results, that instant gratification that we live in. And I'm just really curious if you can share a particular challenging project that you've encountered during your entrepreneurial journey, and how did you navigate those obstacles to ensure a successful outcome? Today's episode is sponsored by the Start Here Conference.
Hey there, fabulous folks. Welcome to the Start Here Conference, where the fun begins and success stories unfold.
Yep, you heard it right. We're here to kickstart your journey with a big dose of energy and a sprinkle of magic.
Picture this, a place where inspiration flows, connections bloom, and dreams take flight.
At Start Here, we're all about keeping it real and having a blast while doing it.
No stuffy suits or boring speeches here, just good vibes and endless possibilities.
So whether you're a seasoned entrepreneur or just dipping your toes in the water, there's something here for everyone.
From incredible breakout sessions to a dance party that'll have you jumping out your seats and showing us your best moves, this event will have it all.
And hey, did we mention the food? Delicious bites and refreshing drinks to keep you fueled up and ready to conquer the world.
So what are you waiting for? Grab your ticket, bring your sparkle. Let's make some magic happen at the Start Here Conference.
And now back to the show.
Yeah, you know what? One of the most interesting things you'll find as an entrepreneur that is scaling up organically is that you have to risk it all every time you want to grow significantly. So I started this $50,000 in student debt directly on day one out of graduating from university. I mean, I started into it full-time. I was working on it before then, but that's where rubber hit the road. I had 6 weeks or so cash flow, let's say, before I was bankrupt. So I'm going a bit against my own advice here. I also don't know if I would do it that exact same way again, because it made for a very stressful elements in your 20s, but it worked out in the end. You know, again, consistency and focus on quality, and it worked out. But it was a tough go because I kind of did the all-in route. And I did that straight out of school. Now, keep in mind, I didn't just jump into the idea from day one. As I'd mentioned, you know, I've been kind of brewing on it, poking away. I already had clients as I was going into it. Now, not enough to float the boat, but I had enough kind of momentum to the business that I had a little bit of confidence in it, at least, that I thought might be a seed that would grow. So I would say one of the big challenges that probably a lot of entrepreneurs are going to face, whether they are funded or whether they are self-funded, is this concept of scale. Because there is this element of time where you're going to have to make a decision on an element of risk. It's like you have a certain amount of resources and you've got, in my case, it was a few weeks, you may have a few months, and at some point it's going to run out. So your goal is to hit certain targets so that you can either make enough sales that the money keeps coming in and floats the boat, or you can achieve a certain milestone, in which case you can go to an investor. And because of achieving those milestones, you've grown from there. I decided to take the slow and steady route, the turtle wins the race sort of situation. And I never took on a dime of financing from school all the way up through to still to today. It's still myself. I'm still 100% owner of Mako Design, and it's grown entirely through client acquisition and reinvesting any money that was left over at the end of the year back into the business and so on, doing that year after year. Now, where it's tough is the fact that, you know, that works if you want to grow 5-10% per year. But there were times where I could see, for instance, when we wanted to build out an electronic engineering team in my early 20s, and again, when we want to set up our second office, at both of these times, I basically had to say, look, I'm going to try and double this business within 2 to 3 years. As such, I'm going to have to take every last penny that has been earned and invest it very strategically and very carefully into these initiatives. So story number one, trying to build out an electronic engineering team. Electronic engineers are expensive. These are six-figure individuals. And you can't just hire one and all of a sudden have an electronic engineering department. You need to have PCB board design, circuit design, firmware design, and ideally manufacturing engineering as well that goes into just the electronics, let alone the industrial design, let alone the mechanical engineering. Which is why hardware is a bit tough, because you need six or seven different people in order to take a product from idea through to production. If it's got electronics, you're probably more like 9 or 10 different highly skilled people who all work well together and are all top of craft. So you've got this together. So that was, again, one of those initiatives where you kind of had to risk it all, believe in yourself, put your foot down. But I somewhat followed my advice when I said slow and steady, where I didn't just go all in and hire three people at once. We originally hired one person and a couple part-time people, and then the part-time people came to full-time. And then all of a sudden now we had a full-time team and then a management team for that. Similar when I went down to Austin, Texas, which was our second office, we had 1 year where you legally have to prove that you are of value to America, to the civilization and to the economy. To in 1 year, meaning you have to grow your customers to a certain amount, you have to grow your staff to a certain amount, and you have to show that all of this is very valuable to the U.S. As this had started in Toronto, and now we were moving the office for the first time, this is about 10 years ago now, to the U.S. So 1 year, and you had to have a really nice office and all this sort of stuff. It all had to be in this like document that was like 2 inches thick, full of paperwork and explanations and everything else. Building it all together, risking it all. And then I lived there for 5 years, brewing the thing and setting it up until we then started setting up other offices. So it was another time where you kind of have to believe in these bite-sized chunks that you've put into your business, see some results, and then leverage up to the next level with that kind of enough meat on the bones to believe in the business and then make it happen, right? And the only way I was able to pull that off is focusing on quality, and focusing on consistency every day, putting a concerted effort towards my most important goals.
I love it. That's all we need to know. Consistency and quality.
One thing, I'll tie that all together in a bow. Yeah. I kind of hinted to it just there, is your top priorities. If you really want to be a pro at these two things, consistency and quality, and you want to do that for a long time, for instance, let's say you're looking at it, I'm going to develop my business or product within 1 year, but I'm going to still keep my job. Well, how do you become really efficient and effective with that, let's call it 3, 4 to 10 hours per week that you're putting in? Yeah. That all comes down to prioritization. You need to build your list, figure out what's at the top of the list. And the first thing that you are doing every time that you're putting time into this thing is the top priority items. Top priority does not mean most urgent. That means most important. Yeah. So if you're going to be effective with that smaller amount of time, just focus on your list. And I've actually heard some interesting experiments on how to do this well. One of them I heard that I really liked was, you know, you write down your top 20 most important things to this business objective that you're trying to do. Then you basically start scratching off the least important until you only have 3 or 4 left. Then you actually cut away those other ones and you leave your list of 3 or 4. And that is the only things that you focus on for the next little while. So yes. It's really trying to drill down to those ultra important things. Whereas if you do those things well, all the rest of it will fall into place exponentially because you've done the most important things.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I always like have every day, I have my top 3 priorities, like what needs to get done today. If I can get other things done, great. That's a bonus. But those are the top priorities, because it's really easy to focus on the fluff or the things that aren't as important because they're easier to get done sometimes. Yes. But it's just really looking at that. So I'm really glad you brought that up, because I think that is so key to anything, because everything is a priority sometimes. But how do you really zone in on what is actually a priority that's going to have an income producing activities as well as what's going to move the needle forward?
The more you do it, the easier it becomes. Okay. So I have no problem right now waking up first thing in the morning every day and just handling just the biggest, nastiest, most complex project right out of the gate. It almost becomes exciting. Like, yeah, you want to go after those big challenges, and you almost start getting this, like, I hate to say it, but this like quasi like nervousness / anxiety feeling when you're doing something that really, you know, is not a priority right now, or something you could delegate, or something that is really a non-emergency feeling emergency that you're now taking away from a much bigger, much more important project. And the more that you do this, it's like a muscle. And I feel like it's one of those muscles that is never ending. You can always improve, you can always evolve. But if you focus on prioritization and handling those big ticket items, every year you will feel significantly stronger and better at it than the year before.
Yeah. Because so many people procrastinate. So being able to get it done first thing in the morning, the bigger thing, it's such a relief. And when you are working on things that you probably need to be holding off on, I feel the same way. I get a little bit of anxiety. I'm like, oh, I need to delegate this. I can do this later. I don't need to be doing it right now. But it's like avoidance sometimes. But it's keeping yourself in check. And I'm just really curious, because of talking about the consistency and the quality, I know you have offices not only in Toronto and Austin, but also Miami and San Francisco. How do you ensure consistent quality and collaboration across those different locations, especially when it comes to the specialized field as product development?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've actually got a pretty unique operation as a design firm. Just going into the weeds a bit here, maybe some of these ideas and tools will be helpful for others. We actually operate as one large design house. We were very adaptive to digital technology. This is well before the whole COVID thing. We were one of the early adopters of not just Zoom, but also Zoom Phone and other integrations that allowed you to really operate very flexibly with, I don't think that's a real word, operate in a very flexible way with a lot of different team members all over the world, really. Now, that being said, we still require all our head office staff and especially all of our designers, which is 95% plus of our work is almost entirely in-house. Those folks who are all full-time all have to be within a reasonable proximity to the office because we do come in a couple of days per week physically to meet with everybody, but we still do largely hybrid. So one of the things that we did when we were expanding is not look to figure out how we could try and have a complete replication of the business in a particular zone. But we instead looked at it to say, how can we expand? But this just is an extension of our offering, increasing skill sets. So we actually weren't even considering really or caring about the location. We were looking for specific skills. So skill gaps within the firm that we wanted to fill. The next hire or next two hires or whatever would be a very key and core skill gap, just happens to be in that particular area of maybe the new office that we're building out. So now that we have these four studios from coast to coast, we've got an amazing pull for talent. And we're by far in our two main offices, which is Toronto and Austin, we're by far the most applied to product design house, probably by like a factor of multiples here. Not only because we deal with startups and, you know, it's cool and there's a lot of project work, but also because we have that ability to be kind of a very public and front-facing firm with a lot of these projects, and the designers get to be a part of that whole kind of community element and education and entrepreneurship and all that sort of fun stuff. But because we have offices now from coast to coast, you could be anywhere in North America and say, hey, I want to go work for a Macco office. And there's one, you know, not too far from where I'm at, whatever else. We hope to really start filling in those studios and that presence and that national presence over time as well. But, you know, for now, we've got the four studios from coast to coast and we operate as kind of like one powerhouse team. We've also got boots on the ground overseas in China for manufacturing. And this really helps build the web. Again, coming back to my early days of when I was at business school and then studying abroad at Hong Kong University, kind of bridging that gap between design and engineering. And for still, I would say the large majority of our products, still most of the parts or at least components are produced overseas. More and more of that is coming back. And we do a lot more stuff with like short run manufacturing or fairly unique projects that require kind of like for a variety of reasons, local elements to it. So, you know, it's always better the more we can do, but the reality is, you know, we're still looking out for the best business case study for each of our clients. So we look at a global marketplace for every piece of supply chain.
I love that. And I think it's so interesting how it evolved, because you weren't set out to be in all these different locations. It's just where the talent was and it started to morph and develop from there and continue to expand so you can help more people, bring more products to the hardware startups as well, and just being able to continue to expand that. And I'm really curious, I want to kind of switch gears for a second. I heard of the smart minimum viable product method. What is that? Can you explain that?
Yeah, SMVP. You've been doing your research. I'm impressed. That's deeper on the website. But yeah, when we set out to develop products for startups, it doesn't just mean you can hire some designers and engineers and now just start building products. The whole process for how you develop a product, how you go through the prototyping rounds, how you go to manufacturing, all has to be very startup friendly. It has to be quick to market. It has to be done in a world-class standard. It has to focus on the consolidated set of features, not trying to be everything to everyone. And it has to be cost effective because we're dealing with small business. So we really put a lot of effort over many, many years, and it's still an ongoing effort to really perpetually improve using technology on the back end, a number of different tools, all the way from education to customer relationship management to project management to actual data sharing and security and all these sorts of things, in addition to a whole library of CAD tools and technologies that we use. These things all come together to form quite an advanced methodology, system, processes for somebody to fairly rapidly take their idea from that sketch through to manufacturing. So smart minimum viable product is a big derivative of that, which really means focusing on MVP, minimum viable product, as we talked about. The smart is, in simple terms, there's a number of elements to it, but in simple terms, do that minimum viable product at a world-class level of quality, which we talked about earlier in the show and why that is so important. But that is really a key difference between hardware versus software and or services. Hardware, once you make the thing, that is your brand. That is your product. That is what your customers are not just reviewing, but that is the what your customers are reviewing to set the pace of what your brand represents. And even if you're just a one SKU product, even if you're a one SKU product for your whole life, meaning one product, you never go past one. You've got this one idea and you stick to it.
Right.
That is your brand. You as a startup, that is your brand. And we're not talking big brand like Coca-Cola. We're talking you, your name, whatever name is on this product thing. That matters for so many different stakeholders along the path. So you cannot sacrifice quality. You can absolutely sacrifice features. You can go to a much smaller target demographic, but you cannot sacrifice quality. And I'll tell you the cherry on top for this, and this is going to be applicable to any type of business, and it kind of wraps a lot of the things we've been talking about into one. It is far easier as a hardware startup to sell a very tight, narrow offering than it is to sell the everything to everyone product. I can't tell you how many product sales experts I've had that have done hundreds of millions of dollars in sales on my podcast, The Product Startup, which is only for hardware products. But we talked to a lot of experts that sell specifically hardware products, but this is very applicable to everything else as well.
Yeah.
And they say, if somebody comes to me, this multi-feature widget, I immediately go, this is going to be a tough sell. Whereas if somebody comes to me with an extremely specific, very, very niche product, like one out of every 100,000 people might even want this thing, they look and they go, okay, this is a global market. I have nearly 8 billion people to sell to. I'm going to market specifically to these exact people, which is so much easier now with all the AI tools through Meta Advertising, Google Ads, and a variety of other providers as well. You can get in front of those exact people that have that one very specific pain point that you're going after. You can charge more for it. They'll be exponentially more appreciative of it. And at the end of the day, remember, this is a much simpler version of your offering. So it's going to be a heck of a lot easier to actually service or provide a great product for that very narrow offering. From there, you will then learn from those customers. And what I found with hardware startups is incredible. They don't realize how big the market actually is. Even if they think it's a tiny product, like who's going to want to have this like bedtime story thing that you put on only your iPhone. That's the only thing it works for. And it's going to shine this projection onto my children's story. Well, how many people are in that age and with the iPhone specifically, and then are going to buy this product and clip it on their phone and they have to know how to use an app and whatever else. Well, that's one of our early clients, Moonlight. They did $500,000 on Kickstarter and another $500,000 on Indiegogo. They then were sold to Spin Master Toys that within a year were in 70 countries. So what they thought was a very narrow window, tight, very hyper-specific product, it ended up being a global success. And what's incredible is they then leverage that to make more versions of the product. Of course, they have an Android version after that. Right? So, and all of these other things as their customers say, I wish this, I wish that. They've got all these different characters now, Dora the Explorer, all this sort of stuff that they're working with. But the reality is the concept started extremely simple, small, narrow. They were able to advertise directly to that very specific audience and then spread their business from there.
Absolutely. Well, it's like it's said so much in the business world. If you're talking to everyone, you're talking to no one, but you're able to really focus in on, even if it's very niche down, you can have so much more impact because it's for that particular type of person and you're talking directly to that person. It might be 100,000 people versus maybe 8 million or 8 billion. But then when you start getting into different industries and different countries, it shifts because ultimately there are people that are going to want the product, but it goes back to those smaller amounts. And I'm really glad you brought up the podcast because I wanted to ask you, because it's called the Product Startup Podcast and it has such a significant amount of resources in the hardware development industry. What motivated you to start this podcast? And what do you hope listeners gain as they listen to your episodes?
It's funny. I literally just started as a hobby. Because I found myself having these repeated conversations with hardware startups. And I said, look, I've got to figure out a way to spread this. Why don't I just start a podcast? And I ended up talking to a guy who had actually built the first 50 episodes of the Product Startup Podcast. And he was on his way out. He got this big corporate job. He said, I don't have time for this thing anymore. So I said, well, I'm looking to get into the space. I'm either going to start one from new or we can keep the legacy alive. So I took the thing over, both the ownership of the podcast and hosting the podcast at episode, I think it was 55. And now we're at 200 and something episodes, depending on when this airs, you know, well into the 200s probably then. So the reality is it was really just a way of talking about a number of these issues. And it's not just me. What I really was excited about is every episode, very much like your podcast, I bring a 7 or 8 or even 9 figure guest onto the show to talk about best practices around it. And that has been a very enlightening and enriching experience for myself. Many of them, which I knew, which was my initial audience, but also many new ones that people I've never met before that I got introduced through or whatever else. So it's been a blast. It's been a lot of fun. Like anything, it's consistency. It's a lot of work. We've been doing, you know, 48 episodes per year. I haven't missed one yet. So it's sticking to that hardcore consistency and focusing on quality for your customers. And if you do that, it becomes very successful, as ours has now by far the biggest product, not just in the hardware startup world, but in the overall product development world by far. So it's just been an exciting ride. And that's why I love being on shows like yours, that I know you're doing a very similar thing. You actually had a very similar size as well. So kudos to you for having so many different guests that to be able to help everybody listening in. It's an amazing thing that you're doing.
Absolutely. And likewise, I listened to a few episodes, but it's so interesting to see that journey of just really the best practices, what the product is, how they even really got started in that. And I think that's that pivotal moment for people to hear that no story is the same, but the feelings around it are the hurdles that everyone goes through hurdles. There is no like straight line in that process, but I love what you're doing. And I'm so curious, looking ahead, what are your aspirations in the future of Mako Design and Invent, and how do you envision that continuing to make an impact in the world of hardware startups and product development?
Much appreciated. You know, I'm at an interesting time where I just really love where we're at and what we're doing. So I just want to do more of the same. That really, it's probably the most boring answer you've got on this show, but the reality is I'm in a place where it's a really well-oiled machine in terms of the actual business, which is great because it really, in the early days it is tough. You're going to go through growing pains. You're going to learn that you know, assumptions you had were wrong. You're going to, and then you're going to use those learnings, hopefully to really create the best version of what you thought for your audience, which is your customers. So for me, I'm loving the podcast and I'm being a part of that. I'm loving the business and working with all these hardware startups. So for me, I just want to continue that trend to get more startups through the door, more of these crazy innovative ideas to market. And I live somewhat vicariously through our clients that are, you know, growing to be these much larger companies than my 35 person design house, some of these, you know, massive hardware product empires that they're building. And for me, that is tremendously powerful to see that from the very early stages all the way through to and into the scale phases. So that's really all it is.
I love it. And it's you're getting to see that creativity unfold and making an impact in every product that is developed and seeing that transform not only the person that you're working with, the client, but then also that product and how it's helping so many people. It's just amazing. Like I just feel this burst of like energy around me. I'm like, yes, this is exactly what is needed to continue just to foster ideas and innovators and entrepreneurs and small business owners to really thrive in whatever they want to create. But it doesn't matter where you start, you just have to start. And Kevin, I've been so enjoying this conversation. Where can people find you? We're going to link everything below, but if you could let us know too.
Yeah, just go to Mako Design, MAKODesign.com. There's tons of resources. If you're interested in hardware specifically, go there because that's all we deal with. So if you're a non-hardware product, you know, there might be some good stuff on the Product Startup Podcast or at MakoDesign.com. But the reality is we are super focused in our lane, somewhat akin to our advice earlier on the show. So we deal strictly with physical inventions, gadgets, whether they're electronic or very simple non-electronic houseware products or anything in between. That is our MO, and we exclusively work with small businesses and startups on that. So if you know, macrodesign.com to learn more. And of course, anyone, feel free to add me on LinkedIn. You can look me up. I'm easy to find across all the social channels. Always sharing all kinds of tips and tricks for hardware.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Kevin. I so enjoyed this conversation. I feel like I learned so much. And I'm like, I really want to create a product now. I know who to go to. But I just so appreciate you sharing all your insights, everything you're doing in this industry to help so many other people continue to have that impact and that ripple effect. So thank you again for coming on today.
Thanks so much for the invite. Looking forward to hearing the episode come live.
Absolutely. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment below. What was the biggest takeaway from Kevin today? I'm sure he would love to see that comment. And we'll see you on the next episode.